It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
But the Krell forgot one thing, it. Monsters, John. Monsters from the id.
There you go again, always blaming me for everything.
Go switch off!
Exterminate!
It's a trap!
This looks extraordinarily bad.
Commencing countdown. T minus 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Skiffy and Fanny Show, episode 6.2.
Warning, Jenna had wine and will therefore probably ramble more idiotically than usual.
I'm Sean.
And I'm Jen.
And of course we have with us Jason Sanford. Welcome.
Hey.
What was that?
This is my other...
Hey, my Fonzie imitation.
Okay. All right.
Keep working on that.
Yeah, it needs a little work. It's a little
my
rusty.
My other tagline for this evening was Jason Sanford has kindly allowed us to stalk him, which makes us worry about his mental health. I'm just putting that out there.
Anywho, so this episode is kind of going back to something we haven't done in a long time, which is news. We've done almost no news in months.
Months, because we've been leaving that up to the Twitter feed.
This is true. So we're going to do a little bit of news, we're going to have a discussion, and then we're going to talk about Christmas. Which is wonderful. And we're of Jason's going
to sing... Christmas Kwanzaa, to be politically correct.
Sure. But Jason's, of course, going to sing us a lullaby before we leave.
Jason, don't sing.
I think you forgot to mention that in your direct message earlier.
Yeah.
I might have.
Have you seen that great movie, Machete? Have y'all seen Machete?
No, I haven't yet.
Damn it.
It's great. It has all these great lines. Machete, don't text. That's my favorite line. Machete, don't text. So, hey, Jason, don't sing.
Oh, well.
Duly noted.
But just so you know, I can auto-tune anything you say. So, I can make you sing.
Can we have a completely auto-tuned episode of the Skiffy and Fanny Show?
No. But anyway, so we should move on.
Okay.
So the first big news, something we actually put on our blog, but we're going to talk about it here anyway, which is the news that Angry Robots is launching Strange Chemistry.
Woohoo!
It's really cool. It's a new thing for Angry Robot because it's YA specific. And really, Angry Robot's been like releasing a lot of really cool information lately. They did, of course, they publishing two people from their... that month thing where they just take unsolicited whole crap load of submissions all at once at like contests they had. They're publishing two people from that, and now they're doing this with Amanda Rutter of Floor to Ceiling Books as the head. So this is awesome.
It is pretty awesome, only because I keep looking for good, high quality science and fiction and fantasy for my darling daughters. So it's always nice when people who are already releasing fantastic adult science fiction and fantasy start doing it for kids.
Well, I totally agree. In fact, this is good because I've been grumbling and yelling and screaming about this for a long time that we need more young adult science fiction. I mean, we have a lot of fantasy, but it's the fact that if they put out some good science fiction for young adults, I think it's a great thing because we need more entry level novels and fiction for our genre.
Absolutely. I completely agree. There have been a couple. I think I have one, and I've forgotten the title now, but it's on my Nook somewhere that I'm reviewing. There are a few coming out, but it's still overwhelmed by all of the fantasy, so... Just a little sad.
It definitely is. And most of what's coming out so far is like... it's great. There's some great stuff. There's The Hunger Games. There's Paolo Bacigalupi's...
Shipbreaker.
Shipbreaker. Yes, I blanked for a second. In fact, I just saw a tweet that the sequel, they have Galleys out now for the sequel, which is called The Drowned Cities.
Oh, that's a nice title.
Yeah, so it should be good. And I know my oldest son is very eager to see the sequel. So, I mean, there's stuff, there is young adult fantasy, science fiction out there. But it'd be nice to have some, you know, a lot more of it.
Right. Yeah. I wanted to flood the market on the level that fantasy is essentially flooding the market. But we had an interesting conversation with Kay Kenyon, two episodes ago.
2 episodes ago, yeah.
And, you know, I was arguing the fact that there needed to be more science fiction with female characters, at least from a personal standpoint, because...
Why?
Well, because I think...
I'm joking. I'm sorry.
Oh, shut up.
Sorry,
well, no, I will explain for our listeners. and sexist Jason. Just kidding.
No, I agree with you, but go on. I'm just messing with you. Go on.
Because of the fact that if we want to get more women into science-related fields, you need to inspire them to that level, and science fiction does a great job of doing that.
Yeah, and an interesting thing, just kind of related to this whole idea of like that you need people involved in the field and people as represented in a field in order for it to influence them. An article that I had my students read was a statistical analysis, and it references a bunch of psychology studies about the same very thing in video games, that video games actually, there's a correlation between people who play video games and people who then go on to work in various tech fields, including video games, obviously. But the problem is the people that, of course, make all of the video games are predominantly white males. And, of course, the characters that are in the games are predominantly white male. And, of course, the villains are predominantly male but of other races of various form.
Yeah.
And that this, of course, that the fact that women are also completely generally absent from this stuff. So there is that issue of, like, representation. Without that, it's kind of – you get kind of pushed away to some degree.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And, I mean – you also have to get to the point that too much science fiction these days is, I mean, at least it's stuck in the way it used to be. And, you know, I mean, it appeals to an older and older audience. And if you don't want the genre to die out, you're going to need to broaden the base. You got to bring in younger readers. You've got to bring in more female readers. You got to bring in, you know, there's a mass audience out there that's eating up fantasies and all sorts of other novels, but they're not getting into science fiction. And I think it's because science fiction is just too white bread. It's too the way it used to be. And I'm sorry. So, you know, science fiction needs to get with the current world and move on.
Right. I mean, if you go into a Barnes & Noble, it's almost impossible to find a science fiction in the young reader section.
Right.
They're almost completely absent. Once you hit the teen level, even then it's really difficult. There are a few more, but for the 12 and under crowd, you're looking at fantasy, which is great. I mean, that's what I grew up on, but I also at least had some science fiction to balance things out.
Yes.
And if I want my kids to love science, I mean, I've got a daughter who is fascinated. She told me the other day she wants to be an electrical engineer. Because we've given her kits that she can build things that are, you know, require electrical engineering, essentially.
Yeah.
And if I can give her books that show her kids that are interested in science and using science in interesting and creative ways or interacting with science in interesting and creative ways, then I think she'll take it to the next level. She'll continue to be inspired by it. And I'd love to inspire my older daughter, who at this point is just not that interested in science or science fiction. I think if I gave her books like, I mean, we have the Magic Tree. I don't know if you guys have heard the Magic Treehouse series.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Fantastic, you know, very young chapter books, but which also teaches kids a little bit about history, which is nice. But it's essentially a fantasy series, and kids are obsessed with those books. If you were able to translate that into a science fiction basis, I mean, turn it into an actual time machine as opposed to some sort of fantasy magic-based machine, and you'd have kids inspired by science, I think.
I agree.
Which would be really cool, because I would love to have a cute little 9-year-old kid doing climate change experiments in my backyard.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you look at the people are eating up science fiction in all other mediums, video games and TV and film. And, you know, the science fiction universes that, you know, that are being shown there, Avatar, No editorial comments, please. Avatar, Firefly. You know, we're talking about very diverse universes. You know, where there, you know, women in charge. You know, people from all races, ethnicities, sexual orientations. I mean, look, it's very diverse. It appeals to people. People are eating it up. And then, you know, you're looking at science fiction literature and it's like, what the hell? So I think this is a good trend. It'll be interesting. Angry Robot puts out some great fiction, so I'm excited to see what they do.
Yeah.
And to be honest, they're not the only ones that are starting to push this. Some of the one of the major publishers is trying to gear up a similar thing. I talked to one of the editors a couple of months ago, and, you know, so there's others that are trying to push young adult science fiction also. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Good. That's exciting.
Cool. So shall we move on to the next bit of news?
Sure.
Why not?
Okay. A little bit of fun news, which is that Brian Fuller, who's was a writer for Dead Like Me and Pushing Daisies, seems to be rumored mostly, it seems true that he is going to be revamping The Munsters for NBC.
Now, Brian Fuller, I think, is genius. I'll first say that. Mm-hmm. I loved Pushing Daisies. I think it was one of the most imaginative series that I had seen in years. Dead Like Me, likewise, just a lot of fun to watch. I always mix up the Munsters with the Addams Family, though. So I suppose that shows that I'm just too young to be smart enough to know which is which. But it was funny because we actually watched an Addams Family movie a couple weeks ago, and I was trying to get the girls to watch a couple of episodes of the original Addams Family TV show. And it occurred to me that type of show would be a lot of fun to revamp for the modern generation. Hmm. And let's be honest here, the Munsters and the Addams Family are pretty similar. So I'm excited about this. I think it could be a lot of fun. And I'm hoping that if he does anything like Pushing Daisies, it will be fun to watch. It'll be a beautiful vision. It'll be a great fantasy world, and I'm excited.
Okay, Jen, I am going to prove that I am a little bit older than you because I have watched The Munsters.
Are you serious?
Yeah, yes. I have seen almost all of The Munsters because they used to play it late on Nick at Night.
Yeah.
And I would stay up and I would watch like 2 hours of The Munsters or however long they played it for, I don't remember. Right. But I used to watch it all the time. And The Munsters is amazing. It's a great little like sitcom. And it's great. It's a great show. And I think it'll translate well for the NBC audience if they are really careful. Because the original show, there was a lot of like kind of like it was, you know, it's an older show. And so they do a lot of kind of those jokes that nowadays like a 5-year-old tells you and you just laugh out of courtesy. That kind of stuff. Like, because that was the kind of humor back then, you know. Now I think they would have to maybe push the envelope a little bit to get it a little, because they'd have to make the jokes a little less just like childish. The kind of comedy that was on The Munsters in the old days was kind of comedy that now shows up on like Disney.
Yeah, so. But at the same time, if you look at shows like Pushing Daisies, it had a very kind of childlike humor to it that was really refreshing and heartwarming,
yeah,
and still very amusing.
True.
So my only worry is that Brian Fuller tends to make these shows that people don't like. Not enough people. They end up with cult followings. Dead Like Me and Pushing Daisies both have huge followings in a certain crowd.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm glad you are both so excited and happy about all this. And I wonder what you've been smoking tonight, because here's the issue. Yes, The Munsters was cute. Didn't hold a candle to the Addams Family.
I agree.
The Addams Family, I mean, what the hell? I mean, it's like, you know, it's like, hey, let's see, which one are we going to remake? The Munsters, which is kind of the cheap, you know, monster movie of that series of that time, or the Addams Family, which was like, you know, it's still great. The series is still amazing. You know, the jokes aren't stale because it was subtle. It was great. You know, and no, so they're going to go with The Munsters. It's like, oh, what the hell? Come on, people.
All right, I have to agree with that because...
No, I'm going to totally disagree with you, and I'm going to explain
why. The Addams Family because of the satiric quality of the Addams Family. I mean,
yes,
Wednesday is still free. I mean, the newer movies of the Addams Family, as much as I don't think they were as good as the original series in some ways, they were still really good reimaginings of it. And Christina Ricci is Wednesday. I'm sorry. One of the most iconic characters in
right.
my lifetime, in my opinion.
Come on.
And, you know, like, my kids watch her and are like, I totally get it. Because I mean, my kids are like her.
Well, look,
every character in the Addams Family was just gold. I mean,
yes.
Talk about a series that – and I agree. You know, he would be great if he was redoing a series like the Addams Family. But the monsters, I'm like, okay, well, we'll see. I mean, yeah, he may do a great job, but it's like – I don't know. Just...
Here's why I'm going to challenge you on this, because we've said on this show before, and I think you've been part of it, Jason, where we get angry with Hollywood or the TV networks to remake something that was already around fairly recently, right? Because it just seems too soon. Well, the problem is the Addams Family has been within the popular consciousness since the 1998. That was the last Addams Family movie, was 1998. Now, granted, okay, like, over 10 years, like 13 years or whatever.
93.
Sure. No, 98.
93.
Well, okay, yeah.
Addams
I'm sorry,
Family
Reunion. No,
Addams Family
you
Reunion.
You're not allowed. You are not allowed to count Addams Family Reunion.
Yeah,
you can't
I'm sorry,
it
we're not counting
because
that.
It's, you can't count it because it's not Raul Julia. And the man was a, I can't swear, he was a freaking genius.
No, I'm sorry. You can
as
count.
As Gomez.
You can count it. You
no.
Count it. I'm
it's Tim
no,
Curry and he just wasn't as good.
I don't care. I don't care. That's completely irrelevant to whether or not it's an Addams Family movie. You can argue whether it's a crappy one. That's fine. But it was around since 1998, whereas the Munsters, as far as I know, hasn't been around since the original show was around.
Right.
That's
okay.
Because it wasn't
1964, right? Around the same time as Addams Family, right? So remaking this is really – it's taking something that is so far removed so that you don't have people like, say, us who – watch the Addams Family's movies and how still have that. Because look, the reality is when you and I watch this, if this were the Addams Family remake, Jen and Jason too, if we watch this, we're probably going to be greatly disappointed because they would revamp it and we would hate it because it's so constant for us. Like, I mean, you and I, Jen, you were a little bit older than me, but we were like right at that right age for the movie.
Damn you for having a good point.
See, so I think having the Munsters will be good. In that sense that there really aren't that many people that were children in 1964 left alive. There are quite
a few. I'm sorry. Wow, talk about an ageist comment. Yeah, there is nobody out there left alive who was living in 1964.
I didn't say nobody. I said not many.
Not many?
They are not the target audience. I'm sorry. But 70-something-year-old people are not the target audience for this new Munster series. No offense to anybody who's 70 who's listening to this show, but you're not the target audience because there are like 2 million of you left. So,
can you do math? These people are only in their 50s.
No, they would have been in their like their young years. So they're like 10, 11, 12, 13 years old, right?
Or 5 or 6 or 7 or 8.
Right.
So
that's
maybe in their
50s. Their 60s, 70s, depending on how old they were when they watched this show.
If they were 20, they were watching it.
And they probably were because they were dumb and had 12 kids. And, of course, they were stuck hanging out with their kids and watching the Munsters with their
You're
kids.
You're terrible. I will agree with your point. Because one of my things when I was talking to my family about the Addams Family was really Raul Julia was fantastic as Gomez.
Yes.
Absolutely fantastic. Beat the socks off the original guy. And it would be hard. And I said, I was like, you know, on one hand, it would be really nice if they remade this as a new TV show. On the other hand, nobody can match Raul Julia. And I would argue that it would be very difficult to find someone to match Christina Ricci's portrayal of Wednesday. So...
Okay.
In that sense, I have to agree. But I have to hope that the move with the Munsters is that they take it more in an Addams Family direction. And that will be my final.
We don't need more emo stuff on TV.
They're not emo.
Wednesday's totally emo.
No, she's not.
She's an emo. She just wasn't emo because it was the 90s.
She's a scathing wit. Emo people are not scathing. They're just lame.
She's emo. She would be emo today. That's
We're moving on.
Whatever. Shut up. Just be quiet. So are we all set to move on?
Yes.
We can move.
Okay. All right. So the next bit of retarded news for the week.
It's a bad word. Don't say that.
I'm sorry. The less than mentally appropriate news. How do you say that?
Idiotic. Just go with the idiotic. Because idiotic. This is one of the most idiotic things that I've heard in a while.
Well, I mean, the fact that Kristen Stewart was also playing Snow White in Snow White and the Huntsman. On the other side of Charlize Theron, and yet she's playing Snow White, so she's supposed to be more beautiful than the Evil Queen, which is funny. That's hilarious. Right. But in any case, Kristen Stewart is supposedly on the cast of Akira, the remake of a very important animated movie based on a really important manga. So now we have Kristen Stewart in Akira.
Playing a Japanese chick. Yeah.
Let me know when I can rant, because I have a rant coming.
Well, let me
go.
Are you going to rant about the fact that there are no Japanese people in this whole movie?
Oh, I have many things to rant upon.
Okay,
this subject.
Go for it.
Okay, first of all, I must put out there, Akira is near and dear to my fucking heart, because I was a exchange student in Japan back in 1988 when Akira first came out. Akira there. I saw the lead up to Akira. I saw the two stupid TV specials in Japanese about Akira. I saw the movie when I didn't understand enough Japanese to understand what was going on. And then I saw it in English when I came back here and tracked down a video a few years later. And then I read the entire graphic novel series as it was translated painfully into English by Marvel Comics, and where they would take 6 months between issues at times. I have the entire run of it in English. I have the original video they released here that you can't track down anymore. I love that movie.
Dude,
and
that's hard.
Everyone who's doing this to this abomination they're creating ought to be pulled out of the Hollywood and just shot, put out of their mercy. This is going to be a horrible, horrible thing they're doing. And how can we be surprised by the people they're casting? I mean, yeah, I mean, what the hell? You know.
Should I tell you who else is rumored to be cast in this movie, Jason?
Oh, it can't. I mean, you know, you can't shock me anymore. Everything I've read about this project is just horrible. So I'm like, you know, is it even going to be set in Tokyo anymore?
Well, hold on. Let's look at some things here. It's produced by Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah, huh? Yeah, that's a good. That's always a good thing.
Garrett Hedlund is rumored to be in it, playing Kaneda.
From Tron.
Yeah.
Woohoo!
Yes.
Helena Bonham Carter as Lady Miyako.
Wait, what?
Helena Bonham Carter as Lady Miyako.
I mean, I love Helena Bonham Carter, but seriously?
But yeah, she's about as Japanese as I am Ethiopian, yeah. Gary Oldman as the Colonel.
You know, I gotta admit, that's the only choice so far that I'm not, you know, my stomach isn't knotting up and throwing and trying to hurl into my brain to kill me on.
Right. It almost makes it. Not Japanese, obviously, but...
Oh, yeah. I mean,
going to be white-breading the cast, then you have to go with Gary Oldman.
But
I got
you
one
do
more.
Know this movie is not going to be set in Tokyo.
Oh, no.
Probably
set
not.
In New York City or Los Angeles.
Then it's not really? Akira. It's the Three Mile Island project.
I guarantee at some point along the way, they will retitle it.
It's Three Mile Island.
See? Now set in Neo New York.
Oh, my God.
They
shouldn't call it Akira. They should just call it Oppenheimer.
Right? They have to rename it. I mean, that's...
And Keira Knightley is also rumored to be in this.
Wait.
Hey, the only only good news on this project... Would you like to hear the only good news?
I can't
okay. hear that Keanu Reeves was offered the role of Kaneda. Oh,
that's right. That is...
And he did what?
Dodged a bullet.
He turned it down?
He turned it down.
Oh, thank goodness.
I'm going to say this for the first time and only time ever in my life. Keanu Reeves, thank you.
Oh, that's totally true. Oh, that would be so
cool. A very, very loosely related note. I have a friend who wrote her master's thesis on how Keanu Reeves is the greatest actor of his generation.
And she graduated?
Oh, yeah. I have to, like, part of me has to, like, feel, I've never read it, I really want to, that she did it tongue-in-cheek. I really hope, because I have a lot of respect for her otherwise, but we've never agreed on Keanu Reeves, obviously.
Oh, he's only good in the first Matrix movie.
No, he's only good in Bill and Ted.
Yeah, I was about to say, come on now, get with it, Bill and
Ted. Oh, yeah, no, that's good. No, I'm sorry, I forgot about that.
That's it. He's not even that good in The Matrix, because...
Have you heard they are supposedly rumored to be making a sequel to the first two Bill and Ted movies?
Yeah, yeah, I've heard that.
Yes.
Both actors are supposed to be coming back.
Yes.
That's going to be a... sorry.
It's going to be awesome, and it's going to be totally 80s camp.
Having a little too much wine over there?
Oh, no, but I think about it. I mean, the other guy, the guy who played Ted, not doing well last I checked.
Yep.
He looks like a meth addict, excuse me. Up against a lovely Keanu, who will probably be exactly the same way he was in the original movies, because he hasn't developed as an actor any iota past that point.
What are you talking about? He doesn't look like a crack addict. What are you talking about?
The last time I saw him, he looked a little bit like a crack addict. I'm sure.
No, he's not. He hasn't had a great acting career, that's for sure.
Well, I don't know.
He was in a TV show in 2007 called Saul of the Mole Men.
Yeah, that...
And he played King Mole Man.
Really looking forward to it. It's going to be epic. Kristen Stewart needs to be shot, and... So do the people making this movie. Leonardo DiCaprio should be banned from ever making a Hollywood film ever again.
Oh, gosh.
And, yeah.
Should I ruin it for you? He has three films coming up. two next year and one the following year.
You make me hurt.
He's in a perfect movie for him, though.
I don't even want to know.
It's called Generation
I think that's what he said when someone said, so do you want to make Akira?
Well, getting back to Akira, this is not going to be and you know what's going to happen is the movie is going to be a box office hit, oh. And it's going to, everybody's going to think, this is Akira.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and then they're gonna like suck up all these other major properties and make them into movies like they did with the Japanese horror films.
Well, possibly,
which
yeah.
Didn't do that well. Some of them, just saying.
Well, The Ring did pretty well.
The Ring did, but then the rest of them did not.
Oh, like yeah, yeah.
And
yeah,
pretty much been completely panned. So that's pretty much what you're looking at for this movie.
Oh.
It will get hammered alive. Just saying.
Did anyone see the Japanese live-action version of Spaceship Yamato?
No, it hasn't been out on this shore, has it?
No, it hasn't.
I think so, but I really want to see it.
Battleship Yamato, excuse me.
Yeah.
Really want to see it, yeah.
Looks good. The trailer, looked really good, so I'm quite intrigued.
Yeah, I really want to see it. Now I'm going to look for...
If those guys were the ones making Akira...
Well, why aren't they? I don't understand why a Japanese company's not making this movie. Like, wouldn't Ken Watanabe be perfect in an Akira movie as one of the characters?
Oh, my God.
He could be the Colonel. He would be amazing. Even if it was in English. I don't care. Or the freaking guy from Sunshine.
Never. Oh yeah, he's good too.
Yeah, I forget what his name is. He was in The Last Samurai.
Yeah.
Oh. See, we should actually write all three of us should say,
okay,
we're gonna do it from now on.
Can I just put this out here? This news report ended up being more depressing than Terry Pratchett's starting the process did.
Oh.
which is really sad. But more depressing.
Thank you. Okay, so shall we move on to our main sort of mini segment? It's not we're gonna not talk too long, but kind of just in general terms. Is everyone ready?
Sure.
Okay, so I suggested we talk about magical realism. So unless anybody wants to completely change the topic,
yes, let's talk about spuds.
No.
Spuds.
Just spuds. The fact that, you know, they're now vegetables again. And
so is pizza.
So is pizza. I'm sorry. We can go back to magical realism now.
Anyway, okay, so magical realism. So I guess what I want to start here. What do you guys think is magical realism?
Well,
Jason, go.
Well, it's pretty obvious. I mean, it's any fiction that is both magical and realistic. Sorry.
You went there.
I did.
You did.
Although it is a valid point. I mean, that's essentially.
I mean, come on, let's be honest. Magical realism is basically literary fantasy. It's yes. Fantasy that's been accepted by, you know, people who the high literature folks, you know. So I mean, you know, magical realism, yes, there's some wonderful examples of magical realism out there. Love in the Time of Cholera,
1,000 Years of Solitude, if we're gonna go with the same author.
exactly. You know, there's Beloved, there's there's endless novels that one of my favorite is The Life of Pi.
I haven't read that one.
Oh, it's a great novel. You know, so, I mean, it's basically fantasy elements that in a high literature, and it's accepted by, you know, the academics and literati, and, you know, so they say, oh, this is magical realism instead of fantasy. I mean, you know, but that's an old argument.
Sure. So, Jen, do you want to take it up?
Not really. I think that pretty much covers it.
Okay.
Because let's be honest, I mean, it really is just, it's putting magical elements, sometimes teeny, teeny, tiny ones, like, I mean, we, you and I, in our German fiction class, read Gunter Grass's Cat and Mouse, which is so barely fantasy that you can't really call it fantasy. But it has those one or two tiny little touches that make it not straight fiction. Beloved kind of does the same thing.
Kind of? It's got a ghost in it. I'd say a little more than kind of.
Well, I mean, it has a ghost in it, but you can take it, you can almost separate the fact that she's a ghost in some ways from the majority of the story. You can forget the fact that she's a ghost until, you know, it slaps you in the face and throws you around a little bit. But it's still just the touch. It's that glancing blow of fantasy as opposed to what most people consider fantasy, which is, you know, the kind of the sword and sorcery and the high magic. Oh,
exactly. I mean, we're not talking high fantasy here. We're not talking, you know, the Lord of the Rings and all of that kind of stuff. I mean, you know, it is. And another thing about magical realism is we're talking about a very lyrically written fiction. You know, we're talking about a fiction that is just, it literally sings as you read it. So.
It depends on your opinion.
Well, I mean.
I hated Beloved, just so we're clear.
Well, that's because you're a dumbass.
I see. Okay.
Did not like it. I was so bored. I fell asleep 5 times trying to read it.
I see.
May not have been 5. It may have been 3.
Okay, that's okay. It's only one of my top 5 novels of all time, but that's I take no personal offense.
Clearly you do, because you wouldn't say that.
One of my favorite papers that I ever wrote for school was on Beloved. Absolutely an amazing book. So you're a dumbass, and Jason and I are right, and you should be shot.
That makes me really want to give my opinion now. Thanks.
No, you don't get to give your opinion because we don't respect your
opinion.
Great. I'll just sit back. You guys can just have the rest of the show.
Go ahead.
Another one, Blood Meridian. I'd count that as a magical realism, even though it's more of a horror than fantasy.
Okay. Well, I haven't read that one either.
Even, you can even take Beloved in some ways as a horror. So, because it is a ghost.
Oh, exactly.
And it is, her story is, it's terrifying. I mean, it's not an easy book to read. And I think horror is probably one of the more common things that you're going to see in a lot of magical realism, or things that you could almost put in that category. I don't know, though. I haven't read that much of it, to be honest.
You probably read more than you realize you've read.
That's true.
And I think that's largely because as a marketing category, or as like an identifying category, it's not well defined in terms. Well, I mean, in the academic community, they like to define it, and there's like books about it. But in terms of like outside of the academic community, it's not well defined what magical realism is, what the magical realist texts are. We know what the standards are, but we don't know what else fits in it. Because unlike say, something like say Sword and Sorcery, where it's got defined elements which we can identify. You know, we know it's sort of, you know, sword sorcery, lots of magic and swords and battles and those kinds of stuff. You know, we think sword and sorcery are high fantasy in terms of like, you know, we think Tolkien, we think, I'm going to throw some bad examples, but like Wheel of Time, those kinds of things, right? Those things, but they have elements that automatically identify them. So even when they don't share, like they each have slightly different elements that they don't share, right, we still recognize the other elements as making them part of that genre, and that's not true, I think, of magical realism. No?
No, I don't disagree. I mean, it's
okay.
I mean, I agree. I mean, it is a hard category to. I mean, it's a very expansive category, but then that's, again, I think that gets back to the fact that we're talking about literary fantasy. We're talking about high literature that takes in fantasy elements, and I think the term magical realism was created because there were, at the time when 100 Years of Solitude hit it big, it really started the magical realism category. At that time, you had a lot of people in the high literary establishment who could not accept fantasy, so they had to come up with the rationale for why these novels that were so successful and resonated so well with people, and that they themselves loved, why they were literature, so they had to have a term that explained it. You know, they couldn't just say, oh, this is fantasy, you know, or has, you know, it's literature with fantasy elements. They couldn't just do that. So that's why they came up with the term, and that's also why it's hard to define, because it's kind of we pulled this out of our ass so that we wouldn't have to accept that, you know, the stuff we loved and were praising belonged to that nasty, filthy fantasy genre.
Right. It ends up being a little bit of a catch-all for everything that doesn't have swords and sorcery, you know?
Right.
Yeah, and I think kind of going back to that point, I think one of the big problems with magical realism is it needs to have those defining. Because like when you take something like, say, science fiction, right? There are a lot of texts that predate the actual science fiction era. Like the 20s and 30s is when science fiction actually gets like developed as a genre proper, right? Because that's when you get the conventions, and that's really what a lot of people consider to be what establishes a genre. So a lot of the stuff that's earlier than that, it doesn't necessarily share all those conventions. It's considered proto-science fiction. A lot of people just automatically lump it in with science fiction, but in fact those are not quite science fiction. They are, but they're not at the same time. Magical realism, I just don't think has ever had that, and perhaps because of what you said, Jason, is that it is because of the way it was formed in some degree by certain academics as this way of justifying liking something that they know they shouldn't like.
Right.
And I want to argue at some point that there are elements that define something as magical realism. My problem is I think that what is actually magical realism is not what most people think is magical realism. I think because of the same problems you just talked that we keep bringing up about the academic field is that, or the high literary field, is precisely that they are still using it to lump a lot of stuff in that happens to be literary, but in fact is really just fantasy that is deeper fantasy or whatever you want to call it, but it's still fantasy, and that most of it isn't magical realism at all, that there's something else that is magical realism that has been ignored.
Okay, I'm going to challenge you. Give an example.
Give an example of magical realism, of what I think magical realism is.
Mm-hmm. Or something that is being called magical realism and is not.
I would not consider Beloved magical realism.
Hmm. Why?
I would consider that straight fantasy.
Hmm. Now, I will say for magical realism that I do give the term and the definition of what magical realism is. It does attempt to show how, you know, the life really is. You know, it's everyday life, and we all go through stuff, and we all have moments in our life. I mean, I'm a big science fiction fan. I'm a big science fan. But even I admit there's times I'm like, what the hell did that just happen? You know, or how did that happen? Or the hair goes up on the back of your neck, and you're like, okay, I know there's no such thing as ghosts, but you know what? This is fucking weird right now, and what the hell is going on? You know, we all have that in life. And in some ways, that's one good thing about magical realism. It does try to address that sense of, okay, science can't explain everything. Everyday life, everything can't be explained like we think it can. But then I still think that that's just, you know, part of fantasy, but that's okay.
Well, I would think it is part of fantasy, too, because there's so much that is fantasy that is essentially just about daily life, but in which there's fantastic stuff going on. I mean, a good deal of say urban fantasy, while different than I think something like Beloved, but still shares a lineage in that it is. It's like an everyday setting, and then you just shoved some fantastic crap in it, and now it's urban fantasy.
Okay, so
urban fantasy? Where'd that come from?
Yeah. I'm relating it here to the fact that urban fantasy is generally set in a contemporary insert place here.
Right,
they're set in real places, and then they just insert fantastic elements into it.
Right, but it's a world where the fantastic elements are generally accepted as being fantastic. Whereas in things like Water for Chocolate and Beloved, they're so woven and so subtly incorporated that it's almost hard to peg them as fantastic.
Right.
Except that you can identify that the character's a ghost.
Except that I've argued with you about this, and there you can, in my opinion, actually argue that she's not a ghost. And that it's left open as a question.
Okay, well then that's maybe something different then, and I maybe need to reread the book.
Yes, you should.
Okay. That's fine.
I still think she is a ghost, but I think it's ambiguous enough because, like I said, it's so subtly incorporated into the narrative that you can go either way.
Okay. Well, then my question to that would be, is whether or not she a ghost important to the book, or is that just something that you pick up on outside of the book itself?
It's a little bit of both, I think. I think okay. Her existence, or at least what's the main character? Sethi's understanding. It's Sethi is the mother. What's the daughter's name?
Oh, bloody hell. What the hell is
this? I can't remember right now.
Jason should know this. It's his favorite book.
I don't know it off the top of my head, but okay. I'm still trying to wrap my heads around the fact that what do you mean that whether or not she's a ghost is open to interpretation?
I think it is. I mean, there's the – yes, it's kind of like, okay, yes, she's a ghost. But I don't think it's – okay, on one hand, yes, it's important, also important that she's a ghost because she's haunting her.
Her baby she killed to keep from being taken back into slavery. I mean –
yeah, but
that name, it was just she was beloved. She comes back.
But she, does she need to be?
Her mother's life.
I don't know. I need to go back and read the book too. But
based on that, it's not magical realism.
Because she's a ghost. Because she's a ghost.
Yeah.
And
because
see, that's why I think. I mean, yes, she's a ghost. Okay, and I will put it straight out there. Yes, she is a ghost. But her existence as a ghost is only, how do I put this? It's only important in that she's haunting her mother. It's not important in that she is also a person and she can exist as a character outside of that ghost's, like, outside of being a ghost and outside of the haunting.
That's kind of the point of a ghost.
No.
The ghosts haunt. That's what ghosts
right.
do.
But she's also an individual who is not haunting her mother.
Okay, that still doesn't change the fact that that's kind of the point of a ghost.
Maybe. I don't know.
I guess that depends on which side you listen to.
I think it's one of those things that it's because, and it's also the only fantastic element in the book.
That doesn't mean anything, though.
I
mean, that's like saying like something like, say, The Road, which I would argue is science fiction. Well, I mean, the only thing that identifies it with science fiction is that it's set in a future world where that's gone to pot.
Yes.
Right? But that's the only identifying feature, but that has such a drastic impact on the narrative, on everything about that narrative, that you can't ignore that element and say, well, it's just whatever you would call it if you didn't call it science fiction. And
wait,
maybe that's kind of a poor example. Because,
science realism?
No, well, because that's going to be problematic. But I'm just saying, like that the number of elements is not really relevant. It's, for me, what differentiates something like magical realism from fantasy is that it's the way that element is treated. And for me, magical realism is about de-emphasized fantastic elements. That is that
And that's what I'm saying, is that, yes, she's a ghost, but that's not everything that she is. And I think her ghostness is de-emphasized in the book. I don't think it is an important factor of her relationship with her mother and Sethi's, you know, issues, but it isn't the only thing that she's doing. It's not the only purpose she's serving within the book.
Okay.
And especially in her relation with her sister and Sethi's boyfriend, husband, guy, partner, love mate, whatever. Her ghostness is completely de-emphasized in their relationship with her. The only one who is being haunted by her is Sethi.
That seems like a contradiction.
I think we're nitpicking a bit here. Can we move?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Step it up and move it up a little bit higher.
We've been arguing about this for a while. So.
I noticed. It does seem to have a feel of an argument that's been going on for a while.
I think we've had it before because I remember I said something several years ago about this very thing, and that's kind of why I wanted
to bring
it up.
I think it was only like in the last year, and you're still pissing me off because it's an awesome book. So you suck.
Oh well, bite me. I read it when I was like 18 or 19 or 20.
Yeah, go read it again. Anyway.
Don't tell me what to do. I'm a grown man. I can deal with my own shite.
So I think we all agree what magical realism is.
No.
And is not. Not.
No, we don't agree.
Probably not.
And we'll probably get lambasted about this, and that's okay.
That is okay.
We'll just send all the hate mail to Jason.
Oh, thanks. Just what I need.
Oh, yeah. You know you want it.
Yeah. So anyway, so should we kind of close out by going over what the third thing I thought we should do for this episode?
Christmas!
Yeah, which we know Jason doesn't celebrate because he's a Satanist.
Right.
Christmas Hanukkah Kwanzaa!
That's how rumors get started, and that can come back to haunt me. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Haunt me like a real ghost.
Well, okay, he's not a Satanist. He's just... Flying Spaghetti Monster lover.
Okay, that's
is that
another...
a better rumor?
No, I think the Flying Spaghetti Monster people are pretty stupid too. But that's just my opinion.
So not a Pastafarian then.
But thank you, Pastafarian. That's
yeah. Okay. Well.
Okay. Christmas.
Okay. Well, before we do that, I'm actually really curious. What is it that everybody's reading right now? So let's start with you, Jen. What are you reading right now?
Oh, my God. If I didn't have this now, I would want it for Christmas. But I just got Neal Stephenson's newest book, Reamed.
And or Readme or Reamd.
It's Reamed. It's obviously Reamed.
What? No, it's not obviously Reamed. If it was obvious, everybody would agree.
Yeah, it's Reamed. Anyway, I am everybody and I agree. It's
okay.
Reamed.
So you're reading that. What else?
And it's a... Well, I don't want to talk about the other thing that I'm going to be starting reading.
Model Land. She's reading Model Land by Tyra Banks, which is also what I'm reading. So,
Jason.
Yeah, well, Jason.
I knew there was a reason you two deserved each other.
Yeah. He's making me read it.
I'm reading the Better Angels of Our Nature, Why Violence Has Declined by Steven Pinker. It's a nonfiction book. 830 plus pages, small type.
Oh, my.
I love it. It's basically it's an examination in the entire history of humanity to show basically very convincingly that we are so much more peaceful and less violent today, despite what people may believe, than we were 100 years ago, 200 years ago. I mean, basically, you know, everybody loves to talk about how the 20th century was a very violent century, but you look at human history and it ain't got nothing on the way we used to be, which actually is kind of what I've always believed from my from being an archaeologist and all that kind of stuff. That's what you dig up out of the ground. The people back then did not live happy lives.
Yeah. And that's
You're
one of the
such a nerd.
That's one of the Amazon's best of 2011, I think.
I think it is. It's going to be. It's definitely a must read, especially if you're trying to be a writer. I would highly recommend that people read this.
Fantastic. Cool. And that's it.
It's a bit dense, though. I will say that.
800 pages. Yeah, it's a little.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So me. Is that all you're reading, Jason?
I think so. I mean, that's kind
of. That's not enough.
Yeah. Thanks. I'm actually. Excuse me, I'm sitting there coughing there.
I don't know why.
I'm reading Necropolis, and I can't remember the name of... let me look up the author real quick.
Necropolis. You make scary
Dempsey.
Noises.
Michael Dempsey.
Dempsey?
Nightshade Books. It's good, but I'm halfway through it, and I just stopped for a little bit to read the... Better Angels of Our Nature, and I'll finish reading it. It's a good book. I'm really enjoying it.
Fantastic. Cool. So I'll go over what I'm reading. I'm not going to mention any school stuff because I'm reading like 50 books for school, which is great. But a book that I just got called Broken Words, The Abuse of Science and Faith in American Politics, which I got for review, and I have a copy for Jen. They sent me two copies, which is nice. So I'm reading that, and it's really sort of about the history of the evangelical Christian movement and why the movement as it exists now is sort of like this weird historical revisionist movement that forgot where it came from. And it's really, really interesting. I just finished the chapter on abortion, which you can imagine that what that chapter was like. But anyway, so I'm reading that, and I'm reading Mr. and Mrs. Bunny, Detectives Extraordinaire, and a bunch of other stuff. So yeah, it's great. I'm reading lots of fun stuff, which makes
that
me happy.
Fun.
Oh, and Combined in Uneven Apocalypse by Evan Calder Williams, who was a TA of mine at UC Santa Cruz.
Cool.
Yeah, and that's a very interesting book too. So it has a blurb by China Mieville.
Oh, cool. I could not read a book on the evangelical movement. I lived it. I don't need to read it.
Well, it's a very interesting book, although I think the title of the book is misleading because it's really not about what the title says. It's really about a whole other smorgasbord of issues. But I guess he couldn't say like why evangelicalism is destroying America, because that would probably get him like assassinated. So
it might. Can we go on to Christmas now?
Yes,
because
okay.
I want to tell people what they're supposed to send me for Christmas.
Okay, Jen. So,
Jason,
no more. Is Jason going first? No more than five things. We can't say anything more than five. So you got to get. I'm sorry, but we're gonna run long, and Jason does have to sleep because he is a man, and he's got it's a Saturday tomorrow.
Okay. Okay. Jason.
Oh, I have to go first.
What books would you like for Christmas?
I want Anne and Jeff. Vandermeer's new weird anthology, 750,000 words of a complete history of weird fiction.
I know, I want that too.
Are you in it?
Oh, hold on. Can you hold it?
Yep.
Yep, that you hear my wife? That's my wife talking to me.
Hi, wife.
But yeah, that's a book I'd like. I'm not in it, no. But Jeff's a great guy. So is and Anne's a great woman, and they put their heart and soul into putting together that anthology. And I'm looking forward to getting a copy. That's going to be on my wish list.
It's going to be a great book for when I teach a class on the weird.
I think everything I've heard, it's definitely going to be the de facto text of official text of weird fiction.
Awesome. So, okay, so that's one. So what else?
Oh, I have to have more than one?
You don't have to. Is that the only thing you want for Christmas?
World peace, happiness, you know, Rudolph cleaned and dressed and cooked in my for dinner. I don't know.
That sounds yummy.
Yeah, no, I don't like deer. Never mind. Although reindeer probably tastes really good, though.
Okay, since Jason only had one, can I have more than five?
No.
You suck.
Jason was succinct and very direct, so you have to be the same. You're just really excited? You just want me to, like, drag it out by going over mine?
No, I can do mine next.
Okay, hurry up. Go.
That's fine. Okay, so I'm just gonna say everything that I want, and I'm just gonna say it really quickly. I want Gregory Maguire's newest Oz book, Out of Oz. I want the entire Game of Thrones series.
Oh my god.
I want Robopocalypse, because I've been looking forward to that for a while and I still haven't purchased it for myself.
Oh my gosh.
I need the new Noble Dead book called Of Truth and Beasts by Barb and J.C. Hendy. I need Patrick Rothfuss's The Wise Man's Fear, Day 2. I need the newest Vampire Earth book. And I need to buy for myself, because nobody buys me books for Christmas, and I hate you all, Haruki Murakami's IQ84.
Oh, yeah, that does look good, yeah.
I've heard that's good.
That's the top of my list.
Speaking of that darn book, did you see he got... like something like last time I checked, there was like 20 or 30 people gave 1-star reviews on that book, because for whatever reason they didn't like
dumb.
The Kindle version. No, that's the only reason. It wasn't because they didn't like the book. It's just they just decided to give it 1-star because of the Kindle version.
That's weird.
Which is the most annoying thing ever. Like, why don't they have like a complaint box where they can just put complaints about that kind of BS? Because like the last time I checked, it was like 3 stars out of 5. Despite the fact that most of the reviews have nothing to do with the book.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's life.
It's stupid. Exactly. I don't like it.
But those are all the books I want to read, and so everybody should send them to me and make me happy for Christmas.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, I realize that one of the books that I want, I can't actually get by Christmas because it doesn't come out till February. Thanks a lot, Tobias Bickel.
I know! Jerk. I saw that. I was going to put that on my list, too.
Jerk. Arctic Rising doesn't come out till February. The end of February. Jerk. He should send it to me as a Christmas gift. That's what he should do, is pay back.
Christmas group. He should.
And yeah.
Thank you.
Anyway, but I really want what Jason mentioned was the weird compendium, because that is going to be awesome. And I hope that comes out this year. Does that come out this year?
It's out now.
Oh, but it's only it's not in the U.S. You have to import it. Oh.
You know, one of our lovely listeners is from England.
I know, but that would still mean they could buy it and then they have to ship it, and that book weighs like 2,000 pounds. It's made on paper from like Brontosaurus that's like been grown in a lab.
Well, that's quite the Christmas present that you're asking for.
I'm just teasing. So I want that. I want Redemption in Indigo by Karen Lord, which I haven't had a chance to read, and I really should read since I'm a Caribbeanist, so... Yay! I just found out Amitav Ghosh had a new book come out called River of Smoke, which I really want. And the only other book that I want right now, I don't want for reasons to entertain me in a good sense. I actually want it just so I can read it and then rip this person apart for all of her stupid arguments, which is In Other Worlds by Margaret Atwood.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Which I have listened to people talk about this book, particularly the Coot Street podcast. They talked about it. And, yeah, she sounds sort of like what any woman on the Republican Party sounds like right now.
Why would you want to torture yourself on Chris Mahana Kwanzaa?
Because I don't want to pay for it with my own money, so...
Oh, that makes sense.
So, there you go. So, anyway, so that's really what I want, but I also kind of want world peace, too, Jason.
I actually don't want world peace. Sorry, I just pulled that out of my ass.
It's not very good for business. I'm just
no,
saying.
No, it's not. No.
What?
No, I mean, seriously. The minute you get world peace, someone's going to start a war and kill everyone. So, I mean, it's better if we kind of keep things as they are. I like, you know, let's kind of keep it on a low bubble, you know.
Yeah, but, we have a reasonably good balance going right
now. Yeah, let's not try to get everybody peaceful because I guarantee you some knucklehead will come along and massacre half the planet.
Yeah.
You mean China?
I mean, I did write a story about what happens when everybody gets peaceful.
Really?
Jen and I take over?
Well, I'm going to have to get going here. I'm about to fall asleep.
Okay, so let's close out. So anyway, so if anybody wants to buy us Christmas presents, you can totally do it. And we'll send everything to Jason, too, because cool. Jason deserves Christmas presents.
And he only wants one thing, so that makes it easier.
Yeah. So anyway, so Jason, you can find Jason at jasonsanford.com. Get Never Never Stories, which is still out, as far as I know. It hasn't been eaten, right? Awesome.
No, it has not.
Get it.
And I also have two new anthologies that are going to be coming out early next year.
Oh, fantastic. So, that's right, because of the story, million story, damn it.
Million Writers Award.
Thank you. Getting confused.
I just turned in both manuscripts, and everything's looking good, so they should be out, I think, in March.
Oh, fantastic.
Excellent.
Well, great. So go check out all of that, the stuff that hasn't come out yet. So you should check it out when it does come out. Check out his collection of short stories, Or Else We Will Hurt You. And if you want to send us any sort of messages or whatever, you can do that in four ways. You can go to Google+.
Shawnee Jen.
Email.
SkiffyandFanty@gmail.com.
Blog.
SkiffyandFanty.wordpress.com.
Or Twitter.
Twitter.com/SkiffyandFanty.
We also take smoke signals.
Sweet! Or bat signals.
No, just smoke signals. No bat signals. Yeah, that's for pansies. Anyway.
All right, everybody have a happy, happy Thanksgiving holiday or your variation thereof.
Yep. Fantastic. All right,
take
we'll see
care.
You. Yep. And thanks for being on the show, Jason.
Ah, no problem.
Cool.
I enjoy it.
Always. It's great to have you. So we'll see everybody later. All right, bye.
Bye.
Our new intro music is Time Flux by Revolution Void. You can check them out at freemusicarchive.org.
You're just another weak human afraid to face death.
I fart in your general direction.
France, different planet.
The Force will be with you. Always.
End of line.